Today's podcast is brought to you by Balance 7. Save $10 plus free shipping this week only with code Howie10 at balance7.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up, named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I have a lot of stories here that didn't really fit into the first or second hour that I want to go through that I think you'll be interested in. But before I do that, we had a caller in the last segment, and unfortunately, I did not have time to really issue my rebuttal. But she was basically saying that she doesn't think that what I had been complaining about during the show, which is that 9/11 and January 6th comparisons are disgusting. Her argument, and she was very respectful, and so I want to paint this correctly, but her argument was people aren't comparing the two. They're just saying that after 9/11, we were all so unified, and after January 6th, we are not. Now, there's a few things wrong, I think, with that argument. One being that bringing up January 6th and calling for unity, but then calling for this unity and bringing up January 6th, which is such a highly politicized, sensitive topic for this country right now, bringing it up on the 20th anniversary of the worst terror attack on U.S. soil is in itself a way of not unifying people. It's very, I think, disrespectful. And you can call it, you know, analogies, comparisons. I don't know the exact phrasing for what these jerks are trying to do, what point they're trying to make. But some points, and this is what I would say to that caller, some things can be separate, you know? You don't have to weave everything in. We almost lost, I don't have the exact number here, I have it in one of my stacks. We lost thousands of people on 9/11, thousands of Americans. You know, kids grew up, there was all these stories over the past week of the children of 9/11, kids whose parents had died either in the towers or in the planes or first responders and died. And they grew up without their parents. And there were parents who lost their kids in 9/11 who had, you know, a 30-year-old son working in the towers. I mean, people's lives were changed forever. And it was gruesome. It was really horrific. One person I was watching yesterday, and I didn't realize this, but again, I was in fourth grade when all this happened. So I'm still learning a lot as I watch all these specials. People were dying because they were getting hit by the bodies that were falling from the buildings. I mean, this was very, very just awful. That's the only way I can describe it. I'm not going to try to find some better word for it. It was awful. And so maybe we just leave January 6th out of it for the weekend. You know, what was the caller's name? Margaret. That would be my point, Margaret. Can we maybe just put aside January 6th? I know it's a big talking point for the Joe Scarboroughs of the world. I know people are obsessed with the guy who put his feet up on Nancy Pelosi's desk. I know it was the worst thing since the Civil War, if you ask Joe Biden. But maybe for the sake of, I don't know, the families that lost somebody in 9/11, we could give it a rest for 24 hours. I'm sorry, it was Martha. That would be my whole thing. Can we put January 6th aside for a hot minute? And it's not like they don't talk about it on the regular. You turn on any of these shows, any flipping day of the week, and it's January 6th round the clock. They barely stopped it to talk about Afghanistan and the 13 U.S. service members who died in Afghanistan. They're running with January 6th. They've never stopped. It is the biggest thing that ever happened to these people. And again, I say it all the time. Was it a good day? No. One woman was killed, a Trump supporter. She was shot by a police officer. Maybe we can put that day, just for a minute, in a different place when we talk about 9/11. Maybe we talk about 9/11 and we just talk about 9/11 on the 20th anniversary. But I don't think that that's what Martha and these Democrats want. So now she's telling me, oh, no, they weren't making comparisons. Well, listen to this cut and tell me what you think this sounds like, because maybe I'm not getting. I always say this. I'm not one of the best and brightest. You know, David Ignatius would not appreciate my intelligence, because I didn't go to Harvard. I didn't go to Yale. So maybe I'm missing something here. I'm not understanding the full point. But when I hear Jonathan Capehart say this, it feels to me like he's trying to equate things. Cut four.
To your point about, you know, the world turning away from democracy, we have that issue here at home right now.
So, Jonathan, you see, what I hear you saying is that other forces have changed politics more since 9/11 than 9/11.
Oh, I think so. I think MAGA and the domestic terror threat is much more worrisome than any foreign threat we could face.
That feels like equating to me. And you know what? The last thing I'd say to Martha, and I will make a point of this. She was a very respectful caller, so I'm not trying to sound like a jerk here. But the more I think about the call, the more angry I get, because I didn't really have enough time to play these cuts. But forget this past weekend if you want to make the argument and take this past weekend out of it. Let's talk about all the 9/11 comparisons that are made to push these Democrat points in the past. I mean, people were comparing the election of Donald Trump to 9/11. That's inappropriate to me. Is there some point, is there some deeper meaning to that I'm not getting? You know, is there... Was I taking that wrong? Was I interpreting that wrong? Because it felt like a classless comparison at the time to me when a lot of serious people made that. And then you listen to Nicole Wallace. Take January 6th out of it. I know it's hard for Democrats. I know that's the end-all be-all. That's their favorite thing to talk about. But let's play this cut from Nicole Wallace and Brian Williams. If you want to talk about inappropriate 9/11 comparisons, cut five.
I mean, as many people die every 2 days as died on September 11th in this country, who don't have to die? Anyone in this country over 12 could be vaccinated.
My only point to people like Martha, to callers like Martha, is that it's disrespectful. It's disrespectful to people who lived it, to people who were there, to people who watched it in horror. It really is. I just encourage people not to go this route because it's gross. If you don't understand why it's gross when you listen to those cuts, then I can't help you. But to me, it's gross. Now, what I will say is we have a lot more to discuss here. And I want to talk here briefly about Anthony Blinken in Afghanistan, because he is about to face a lot of lawmakers who are furious about our exit from Afghanistan. And that brings me to this article, and I'll go back to the calls throughout this hour, but there's this article from the Wall Street Journal. It's really interesting. It says, a mistaken Pentagon drone attack. Did the Biden administration mistakenly kill 10 innocents, including 7 children, as it rushed to the Afghanistan exit last month? That is what a growing body of evidence seems to show, and Congress ought to look for truth. Hopefully they'll do a little bit of that looking today. On August 29th, a U.S. missile blew up a car the Pentagon had been following for hours as the U.S. evacuation was nearing its end. And what this felt like to me, and I hope I'm not oversimplifying it, but what it felt like to me was we looked incredibly weak. We had a horrible withdrawal from Afghanistan, and Biden needed something to look like we were being strong and we weren't taking what happened in Kabul sitting down. So he did this drone attack. And what ended up happening, Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, called it a righteous strike. And President Biden mentioned drone strikes as evidence the U.S. was hitting back against ISIS-K for the suicide bomber who killed 13 Americans. This was Biden's way of looking tough, because the optics of looking tough are very important to Joe Biden. That's why he's always talking about how many push-ups he can do, because it's all about optics. And so they thought, we'll do this drone strike, and then it will show that, you know, we are retaliating for the 13 U.S. service members who are now going to be sent back home in caskets. But reporting by the New York Times and the Washington Post suggests the attack on the white Toyota Corolla may have been a terrible mistake. It killed Zamari Ahmadi, a longtime employee of the U.S. nonprofit Nutrition and Educational International, who had wanted to emigrate to the U.S. The media accounts are compelling in their detail that Ahmadi wasn't collecting explosives that day. He had loaded water into the car to bring home because water to his neighborhood had stopped since the Taliban takeover. He stopped during the day at the nonprofit's office, not an ISIS safe house. The missile that killed him exploded in a crowded neighborhood, and the dead included children who approached the car when it backed into a courtyard. Now, I don't have to play this this game here, which I try to limit to once a week. What if this were Trump? I mean, you know if this were Trump, what it would be. It would be impeachment. If Trump had done the things that Biden has been doing, we would be on impeachment 17, 18. There would have been 18 impeachments already. But it really isn't. It's a horrible thing that happened. And Glenn Greenwald was writing about this, and he said, the Biden administration lied about who it killed with its drone strike, because you'll remember, which was insane when we really think about it, at the time of this drone strike, an announcement was made that the Pentagon would not release the two high-profile ISIS planners that were killed in the drone strike. They killed these ISIS planners. You know, they were taking a victory lap. Oh, we killed these two big ISIS high-profile planners, but we're not going to tell you their names. Right there, that does not add up. Right there. You kill some big terrorist, you usually come out and tell people the name. So this is what Glenn Greenwald said. The Biden administration lied about who it killed with its drone strike. They had no idea who they hit. The media mindlessly repeated the false claim that they killed terrorists, when in fact, they just killed innocent people. An entire family in Afghanistan was extinguished to prevent Joe Biden from having to endure a news cycle accusing him of weakness in the face of the attack at Kabul airport, accompanied by lies from his Pentagon / CIA and his media about who was killed. Beyond the fact that the Pentagon and the CIA constantly lie about how their drones have killed terrorists but no civilians, they've been doing it over and over. There were so many reasons to be highly skeptical of the claim from the start, including the tweet about, we will not release the names of the two high-profile ISIS planners killed in the drone strike. And then he references, Glenn Greenwald references a tweet from Charlie Savage, who's a New York Times reporter. This is what Charlie Savage wrote when news came out about the drone strikes. And it says, U.S. officials, drone strikes vehicle with multiple suicide bombers on way to Kabul airport, threat believed eliminated. And Charlie Savage wrote, the U.S. clearly has a remarkable intelligence line of sight into ISIS-K right now. So Glenn writes, look how this New York Times reporter heralded the Biden administration's drone attack, which we now know killed no terrorists but wiped out a whole family, as a pinpoint strike showing what remarkable intelligence the U.S. had in Afghanistan. Do you see how they spread Pentagon and CIA propaganda? But it shouldn't be a surprise, as he points out, that this guy, Charlie Savage, is the same New York Times reporter who, when Trump announced his plan to leave Afghanistan, spread the CIA's fake Russian bounty story. So it all comes so full circle. But it is pretty amazing that this is a story you're not going to really see about now. 844-500-4242. We will keep you posted on Blinken. He's in the hot seat. And if he looks like a deer in the headlights when he's in the hot seat with Jake Tapper, I can't imagine what he's going to look like today. We'll be back with more of your calls, 844-500-4242. Don't go anywhere. I will take all the calls when we get back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. I see a lot of people on the lines here, but before we get to you, let's do the poll question. Today's poll question is brought to you by Fairway Financial. Preparation and planning is the key to your retirement future. Visit fairwayfinancial.net. Jared, what is the poll question, and what are the results thus far?
Will you quit your job if they require you to get the vaccine?
If I'm being completely honest, which I try to be on this show, I probably would not. I probably would just bend the knee and get it if it was required of me.
Up to 56% now say no, they would not quit their job, and 44% say yes, they will.
Now, it's also different for me because I've been vaccinated. So it's hard to put yourself in the position of what would I do if I was really adamant about not getting something that I already have. But I know we have a couple callers on here who do want to discuss this. Let's go to Megan. Megan, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. What's going on, Megan?
Hi, Grace. Thanks for taking my call. Love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to call. Unfortunately, I'm stuck in Rhode Island. And I work for healthcare, not patient-facing, just admin in the back. And, of course, this started before the mandate now from Biden. And in the state of Rhode Island did all this. So the only reason, you know, I'm not anti-vaccine. You know, we've eliminated diseases. That's awesome, you know, or slowed them. It's just been I have medical concerns because of reactions I've had in the past. So they said, to, you know, fill out an exemption. And the state of Rhode Island then puts through, oh, well, you can only have certain things with the exemptions. My healthcare provider and I filled it out regardless, and another person did as well. And I just got my denial for today, and I'm sick over this. There's only one income, so and they only gave so much time, so you don't have enough time to find another job.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Megan. And what you're talking about right now is actually reminding me of the cut I had mentioned earlier. From a nurse who was feeling very similar to how you're feeling now. And I want to play this for you, Megan, and get your reaction. This is a nurse who is telling the world, basically, listen, we were heroes, and now you're trying to make us into the villains, and you were fine having us in your hospitals when we were helping. And now that you have a vaccine, suddenly you're afraid of us entering the building. This is cut 23.
Hi, my name is Heather Cobble, and I'm a registered nurse here in San Diego. I actually resigned from my job yesterday as a registered nurse because of this state mandate to be vaccinated. I was no problem working in the healthcare system over the last 18 months without a vaccine, but now all of a sudden, I'm a threat to public health? Tell me where this makes sense. All of you sitting up here with your masks on, you know that those masks don't do anything. As a healthcare provider, we are taught how to use PPE. We're taught universal precautions, and we know how to implement them when we're dealing with patients who have a viral infection. I don't understand how you guys don't see the bigger picture here. What you're doing is you're creating a healthcare crisis. We already have a nursing shortage in America. So now in San Diego County, I know for a fact there's several hospitals that are operating on an all-bed crisis.
Yeah, now hold on. Let's pause it there because to her point, now this was a few weeks or months ago that cut came out, but I'm looking at a story here from Yahoo News. New York hospital to pause delivering babies after staffers quit rather than get vaccinated. Megan, do you think that these hospitals are going to see shortages just from people like yourself who say, I don't want to have to make this decision?
Yes, you're absolutely right. First of all, too, because I agree with her, she's well-spoken. I was helping write the COVID schedules for the surgeons and the ICU units, so it's okay to do that. And as for your question, that there's already a deficit in all different departments ranging from, you know, I'm able to see this because of where, of who I work for, is that anywhere that the cleaners, the housekeeping, all the way through nurses, doctors, you name it, there's anywhere from a 20 to 60% deficit in staffing, and they're still doing this.
It's really unbelievable. And Megan, we thank you for calling in. A lot of good points there. And it's interesting to hear from healthcare workers who are just completely fed up, and they're noticing the hypocrisy of this mandate. We'll take all the rest of the calls, 844-500-4242, and we'll talk a little bit about what AOC is upset about now. She's offended yet again. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
If we get the overwhelming proportion of the population vaccinated, we will get to herd immunity. If we do it in the next 6 months, it will happen in the next 6 months. If we do it in the next 2 months, it'll happen in the next 2 months.
I don't even, when he talks now, I really feel like Charlie Brown, the teachers in Charlie Brown. I just hear, wah, 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 except it's more, wah, 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 wah. It's all the same, and nothing means anything. If someone tells you one thing and then the next day changes their mind and then changes their mind back, eventually you stop listening to them. It's the boy who cried wolf. It's the man who cried vaccine over and over again. He's insane. I cannot believe that they keep having him on TV over and over again. Now he's doing podcasts. That was from the Skim podcast. I actually used to get their emails. They give you like little blurbs of news. So that's what he's doing now with his time because, you know, it's such an urgent health crisis that he's entering the podcast world. He's going to be the next Joe Rogan. Kevin, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Kevin.
Grace, thank you for taking my call. I love your program.
Thank you.
I just want to just discuss the 9/11 January 6th, what I think is driving it. And it kind of touches on the article that you were discussing earlier. We have an establishment in this country that is objectively incompetent. They have failed. You know, you could look at Afghanistan, but I look primarily, I'm a finance guy, I look primarily at the level of debt that they've incurred, especially since the last recession. So the people that the establishment of this country are just losers. You know, George W. Bush, I didn't like him at the time, don't like him now, but these people are zeros. Joe Biden is a zero. The only thing that they have left is to play to the egos of a lot of these establishmentarians. You know, I have a close family member. Every discussion we get in is about them jockeying for the moral high ground.
Yeah.
And really all they do, the way that our establishment works in this country, it's what it does is it's got a close alliance with a certain class of people, and it really does play off class. If you look at what is happening in our society right now, you talk about authoritarianism, it's the upper middle class that's the choke point for what this is happening is. So you've got a lot of these people that they took the carrot, they have the high-paying job, they're buying into woke culture, they're buying into, you know, all this vaccination stuff, and at the end of the day, you know, they don't want to face that humiliation, and therefore, what I think the establishment does is just it plays to the egos of a very narrow population.
I think Kevin, you really summarized that well. And what it makes me think of a little bit is the article I was reading, and this is more of a specific example. I'm glad you brought up the debt. I'm glad you brought up the finances behind all of this mess, because we are going to get into AOC and Joe Manchin and that $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill in a moment. But another example I would use, Kevin, because you're talking about how rather than admit they're wrong, they just like to have the moral high ground, is the masks. I mean, when these masks started, Fauci and a lot of other experts were saying, you know, maybe don't use them because the healthcare workers need them. And then it became, oh, if you don't have one on, you don't care. You're trying to kill my grandma. You know, you're selfish. You only worry about yourself and you can't, you don't care about your neighbor. And it really did become this virtue signaling thing. And what Joy Pullman wrote about last week, and I was really intrigued by it because it made me think of an experience I have had where it's not like we're at a point now where I think that these people who wear the masks into the grocery store, I'm sure some of them have actually convinced themselves that it's the science behind it and it's for their health. But I think there's a lot of people who don it as a moral symbol that they care. And I think the other part of it is the embarrassment, which you said, that no one can admit that they can't admit their own fault, or they can't admit that maybe this is a flawed idea, or that maybe they were suckered into it. Because so every time they see someone who doesn't wear a mask, they take it as a personal insult, like you're making fun of them, or you're calling out how dumb this entire thing is. Even if that's not your intention, it reminds me of when I used to not drink in college, and people who drank a lot in college would get, I could tell they didn't like me because they thought I was judging them just because I wasn't drinking. I didn't care if they were falling down drunk. It didn't bother me. But they took me not drinking as a personal attack on them. And that's what we're seeing with these masks. People feel like you're attacking them and their whole morality and their whole belief system if you don't buy into it. And that's what we're seeing, I think, Kevin, in a lot of the country right now.
Well, and I agree with what you said, but I the way these people react, their behavior towards the non-maskers or the non-vaxxers, it reflects the way that they receive the information themselves. They didn't receive it through rational argument. They didn't receive the vaccination through data. It was through a moral mechanism. And when you challenge that, you know, it arouses a lot of anxiety. And that's all I'll leave you with, is that we have a narrow group of people that the establishment plays to their ego, but their ego is very fragile. And don't underestimate what fragile people with a lot of power can do.
Yeah, and Kevin, I'm glad you said that moral mechanism, because that's something I've been finding for years. I mean, I have been interested in politics since high school. And I was in the political discussions group, and I would talk about politics with people, you know, and at the time, especially when I was in college, Obama was president, so everyone thought it was kind of cute that I was a conservative. It was like, look at that wacky Grace Curley. She likes Mitt Romney. And now that I look back, that is pretty funny, because I don't anymore. But it wasn't as threatening to them because they, you know, Obama was president and Democrats were happy. But you're right about the morality part of it, because whenever I would get into discussions with people, it was never about the facts. It was never about the issues. It always somehow came out to either I'm racist, or I don't care about poor people, or, and you know what the third thing I would say it always came down to, when they really ran out of arguments, it always came down to abortion. And I would kind of sit there and go, to be honest, like, I thought we were talking about the border. I thought we were talking about, you know, the national debt. And but no, it came to abortion, because that was, I think that's where Democrats really feel like they have the upper moral high ground. Ironically, they think that abortion is their winning argument. And you're right. It always comes down to I'm a nicer person than you. And that was the real interesting thing about Donald Trump, is that what we realized about Republicans, and I was so proud of Republicans in 2016, we realized that we could take the actions above the words, you know? There was this whole thought that Trump could never be president because he wasn't polite, and he wasn't presidential, and he wasn't this, and he had the Billy Bush tapes, and But what a lot of people started to realize was, yeah, we've had people who are presidential. We've had people who are nice. We've had people who care, who cry, who whatever. Sometimes they suck. So maybe this guy, who's a little bit cutthroat, a little bit rough around the edges, who's a New York businessman, maybe he can do it. He says he can run it like a business. Maybe he can. And they hated that, because they know it's so much more than that, you know? We're like gods. We, you know, this Donald Trump figure, this pop culture reality show billionaire tycoon, he doesn't understand the complexities of people like Saint Nancy Pelosi and Saint Chuck Schumer. They live and breathe this. They give us so much of themselves. There's no way he could accomplish what they've been accomplishing for decades and decades and decades. And then he shows up. And you can hate him. You can hate his Stormy Daniels tweets. You can hate, you know, anything about him. You can hate how he says to his 7-year-old on Christmas, "Do you still believe in Santa? I know it's 7, it's marginal." You can hate all of that about him. But he was right. He could do it. It could be run like a business. And he accomplished a lot with no help from anybody, with attacks at all times from the FBI, from the CIA, from his own cabinet, from the media, from celebrities. Nobody liked him, and he still managed to get a lot done. But that really bothered them, because they keep trying to convince you that the moral argument is so much more important. And we also saw it specifically with the border, with the mamas and the babies being separated. And they really played on that idea that, you know, this is a moral issue. This is a stain on the Trump administration. And just to Kevin's point one more time here, what are we hearing now about what's happening at the border? I'm pretty sure when I see pictures from Project Veritas, whenever pictures are allowed to get leaked out, it doesn't look like a great situation. It actually looks quite dangerous and quite sad, but I'm not seeing any of the outrage. Because as much as they constantly go back to these moral arguments, it's phony. They don't really mean it. Your neighbor with the "hate has no home here" sign, let me tell you something. Okay, let me give you a little tip. When I walk by in my neighborhood, and I do, and there's a lot, I live in Milton, there's plenty of "hate has no home here" signs. You know what I always think to myself? I think, if that person knew my political beliefs, they'd hate me. They would absolutely hate me. But that's okay. That hate doesn't count. It's only what they perceive as my hate to people, which I don't hate anybody, but they think I do. They think they know my compass. But they say hate has no home here. And I always think, except for Donald Trump, right? And then you guys don't care if he gets hate. Or, you know, except for Elise Stefanik, that doesn't matter. Or Dan Crenshaw, that doesn't matter. Or Jim Jordan, you can say whatever you want. Or Ivanka Trump, or Barron Trump, you can say whatever you want. If you're Kathy Griffin, you can hold up the fake Trump head, the bloodied fake Trump head. That hate's okay. You know, hate has a little bit of a home there, I guess. The moral argument stuff drives me absolutely crazy because it's so, so incredibly phony and not believable. We will be back with the car crossover, 844-500-4242. I have a feeling I know what Howie will want to talk about. There's a story I wasn't able to get to, but Howie can give us a quick rundown. Remember that FBI agent who was involved in the Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping plot? The FBI, they plotted it, but they also thwarted the plot. So kind of a two birds with one stone kind of situation. Well, I'll talk about that with Howie because we have a very interesting update on that. Let's talk a little bit, though, about the thunderstorm. We've been telling you guys this week that we had an incident last week. Howie was microwaving fish again. He has a real love of microwaving stinky, stinky things in the office. And when he did it, at first, we were all thinking, oh, gosh, this is going to simmer for hours. But not with the thunderstorm. We plug this in. We turn it on. And Jared, I think besides the first question I get from people, which is always, does it really work? The second question I tend to get is, how does it work? And I always think you do a pretty good job of explaining this because I only know how it works based off the smells because that's what I use it for. But you also use it for your breathing and for allergies.
Yes, and this is settled science. You plug it in, you turn it on, and what it starts doing is it actually starts sending out ions, which ionizes the air and eliminates. It doesn't cover up. It eliminates allergens, pollutants, some nasty viruses, pollen, stuff in the air that you just don't want to breathe. So those ions create a super oxygen, which is what you're breathing. And if you have an odor, it eliminates the odor. If you have allergies, it eliminates the allergens. And you are breathing and smelling the room easy after you have the Eden Pure Thunderstorm.
Yeah, you know, Jared's absolutely right. You can save $200 on an Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier 3-Pack. You'll get 3 units for under $200, and you'll save $200, which is a great deal. It works in hours, and it really works. So go to EdenPureDeals.com, click on my name, and put in code word GRACE3 to save $200 for their special 3-Pack. That's EdenPureDeals.com. Click on my name and use code word GRACE3. We will be back. Anthony Blinken is talking to the lawmakers about the Afghanistan withdrawal. Unfortunately, he is not there in person. He is on a Zoom call, but he looks as frightened as ever. I mean, he always looks scared. Deer in the headlights, even when he's on the Zoom call. We will be back with Howard Lawrence Carr. Don't go anywhere. This is the Grace Curley Show.
She's never held office, but she paid the whiskey priest's monthly rent once. She's Grace Curley. She's the friend you never knew you needed.
What? Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
Okay, make that best friend. It's Grace Curley.
Today's car crossover is brought to you by Fairway Financial. Preparation and planning is the key to your retirement future. So call Steve today at 508-444-8003 or visit fairwayfinancial.net. All right, joining me now is Howie Carr. It is the car crossover, and I'm actually glad I saved this story because I know Howie has a lot of opinions on the FBI. And there's a story today from the Daily Mail. FBI agent investigating Gretchen Whitmer kidnap plot is fired 2 months after he was arrested. Now, first, Howie, let's give people a little rundown of this Gretchen Whitmer plot that we were told about for weeks and weeks and weeks. Who planned it?
Well, it was planned by the FBI, and they had 12 FBI agents or cooperating witnesses or informants or rats or whatever you want to call them in the plot, and you only had 6 actual militia, quote-unquote, members that were involved. So there were twice as many FBI G-men as there were militia members.
That's like having a bigger audience than a cast in a play.
Right. Well, they like I said, I've mentioned this before, that I think Bobby Kennedy said that by the mid-1950s, there were more FBI agents in the American Communist Party than there were communists. And the same thing in the Ku Klux Klan in the 60s in the South. And this is the way they operate. And, you know, they've always infiltrated these groups. And so in this case, this guy Trask.
Richard Trask, special agent Richard
they're
Trask.
They're all special agents, very special agents. And he was involved in a wife-swapping ring, I guess, or group, club.
Swingers, you mean?
Swingers, right. And so they he took his wife to a wife swapping party, an orgy, and she didn't like it, so she wanted to leave, so he brought her home and allegedly beat the crap out of her. Ooh. And got arrested.
Yikes.
And so when the defense attorneys for the militia members discovered this in their preparation, they had to remove him. He was the main witness that the FBI had until the thing started. But, you know, I've told a story before that there was an FBI agent that they used against a state rep here, my state rep, actually, when I lived in Somerville, on an attempted extortion case. And he was working undercover, allegedly bribing this guy, trying to bribe this guy and everybody else in the city of Somerville. And they did some checking, and he used to be assigned to Michigan, too, like this guy Richard Trask. And he was arrested one night, this agent that had ensnared my state rep. And he'd been arrested for indecent exposure, lewd and lascivious conduct. He'd left a hockey game between law enforcement agents in Detroit, you know, local cops. I think it even had some Canadian cops from across the lake in Windsor, Ontario. And he had a lot to drink. And so he just pulled over to the side of the road and was relieving himself in front of, you know, various people, and he got arrested. This was another FBI agent in Michigan.
Another but incompetent person.
And crooked, too. He used to run up his expense bills a lot right before Christmas, too. He'd have to buy a lot of stuff in children's shops.
Now, I do want to hit one other topic here. There was some interesting interviews over the weekend, including one with Joe Manchin, and he was discussing how he's not going to go along with this $3.5 trillion spending package, much to the chagrin of Chuck Schumer and Bernie Sanders. But I want to play the cut that really bothered Congresswoman AOC. Let's play this. This is Joe Manchin, Democrat Senator, cut 8.
I don't know the young lady that well. I really don't. I've met her one time, I think, between sets here, but that's it.
This is what AOC tweeted. Imagine if every time someone referred to someone as young lady, they were responded to by being addressed with their age and gender. They'd be pretty upset if one responded with the old man, right? Why this kind of weird patronizing behavior is so accepted is beyond me.
Maybe you should call her the bartender.
It really is insane to me that would bother someone, being called young lady. Like, she's perpetually offended at all times.
She is.
And if you call her AOC, that offends her too, because she wants you to call her Congresswoman AOC. But she really is she's running out of things to be offended by if young lady is on the list.
Oh, no, she'll never run out of anything to be offended by. No.
All right, Howie has a great show planned, so don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.